Hello and welcome to the WTF1 podcast with me, Amber Jones, the one and only Hayden Gullis, and because we're chatting all things Aussie GP, we've got a very special guest on, and that is the official Pondin official, also known as Blake Dalton. Thank you for joining us, Blake. No, how are you?
Thanks for having me on. I obviously appreciate everything you guys are doing at WTF1, living with Hannah, someone who works there. Get to see how it all goes on, all the effort you guys put in. So yeah, no, thanks for having me.
Okay, let's get straight into it. Aussie GP, crazy. Blake, what were your initial reactions?
For a max win, I felt it wasn't the best. For a non-max win, I felt it wasn't as good as it could have been. But obviously, I had some really, really good moments, like a lot of talking points after the race.
Okay, I'm surprised by that. I thought you were going to say, like, wow, crazy, chaotic. Hayden, what did you think?
It was the most boring, exciting race.
The best boring race.
No, I do see what you mean. Again,
Tell me what happened.
I think there was so much that happened.
Tell me what happened.
I mean, we want to get into it, but just to reel off.
Tell me what happened.
Russell, Mercedes, both DNFs, unfortunately.
Okay, two DNFs, yes.
Anything else? Haas in the points.
Yeah, but they didn't do anything. They were just in the points.
I thought they put on a great performance. Haas are really impressing me. Obviously Sainz, you know, Claire podium, the McLarens are really strong as well. So I'm looking at it like, yes.
But did they do anything? Other than just drive as fast as they can with no one around them. That's what I mean.
I think it's nice, though, because it's like you take Max out the race. For me, there was a different atmosphere completely.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Everyone was
there was a lot more excitement
really
amongst people, and
so
I agree.
I think that's why when I was watching it, I was like, yes, what's going on? And I really was taking note of, like, okay, who's doing well, who's not doing well. But I see both of your points on maybe it wasn't the most exciting race, but let's get into the most exciting bit then. I was going to leave this to chronological order, but we'll just get straight into it. Russell.
Yep.
What did you make of the Russell crash?
I mean, I was pretty shocked. Like, when you just saw him kind of flipping on the track, and then he's just sideways on track. I mean, we could probably talk about that after, like, the not red flagging the situation. But in terms of the moment itself, like, I mean, it just looked like he was pushing too hard once again and making another mistake like he has done many, many times now. But then now we know that there was a brake check from Alonso. Quote unquote brake check. I mean, it's been deemed that. But yeah, what do you guys think?
I haven't looked at the data, so I can't look at the brake measurements and all that sort of stuff. However, it's driver tactics. Your tactics are to slow down. We've seen it multiple times in hairpins. Fernando Alonso does it a lot.
We literally saw in Saudi Magnussen doing it the entire race.
Yeah. And he got penalized for the overtaking off track, but not really slowing down. Perez is a great example. Abu Dhabi 2021, you know, slowing down Lewis Hamilton. As a driver, it is you're not just there just to drive as fast as you can and that is it. You know, you're there to think as a driver and to come up with tactics to keep another driver behind you in a faster car. And we've seen it multiple times with Fernando Alonso. Hairpins, most notably, that he will just delay getting onto the throttle to then slow down the car behind and they lose momentum and then they're unable to overtake. And that's, you know, all it kind of is. It's catching your opponent off guard. They have to slow down. They don't get the run out of the corner. I think had George Russell not crashed from it, nothing would have happened.
Exactly.
You know, nothing would have happened. George Russell wouldn't have overtaken him. And that would have been the end of that. I don't think it's a brake check.
And they deemed it potentially dangerous. But what's potentially dangerous? Because to me, going for an overtake is potentially dangerous. It's a high-speed sport. So braking a little bit to, you know, throw your driver off, like, not dangerously, but like trying to get the air wash, whatever it may be.
It's just racing at the end of the day. But then Alonso came out and said that he wasn't really taking too much notice of what was going on behind him. He was focusing on, you know, catching
and dealing
ahead
with an issue.
But then I think it's got a little bit messy because then obviously George came out afterwards, like, when he got asked, do you think he brake checked you? He was like, I'm not too sure, like, I don't know. So then Alonso has said that he intended to approach turn six differently, lifting earlier with less speed to the corner because he wanted to get a better exit. So in the FIA have said afterwards that he lifted slightly more than 100 metres earlier than he ever had going into that corner during the race, as well as braking very slightly at the point he did not usually brake before downshifting at a different point to usual. He then upshifted again, accelerated the corner before lifting again to make the corner. That's why it was dangerous, because it was unusual closing speed between the cars. Do you agree with that?
No.
Again, yeah, I think it's just tactics. And you brought it out as like potentially dangerous. Mm. You know, you bring it back to 2021 and the really intense battle between Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen. I think both of them did things that were potentially dangerous but weren't penalised for them. For example, let's talk about Brazil. You know, Max with a big send off the track. Both drivers went onto the track. You could say that was potentially dangerous because they could have collided. Had they collided, it probably would have been a penalty. I'm unsure. It's one of those things that, yes, okay, if it's a deliberate brake check, then there's blurred lines. It's always difficult. There's a fine line, and it's hard to sort of, well, it's not a fine line. There's a blurred line. It's hard to sort of decide which is what side of it, for example. I don't know. I don't think so. I think, again, it just comes down to driver tactics. And as drivers, that's what we like to see. We like to see their brains work, and we like to see what tactics they come up with. Fernando Alonso is notably known for being a little bit more like that, a little bit more gamesmanship, but that's fine. You know, it's not necessarily breaking the rules, it's gamesmanship. And are we giving penalties as a result of the consequences, or is it the actual actions? I don't know. Sometimes this sport is inconsistent with its decisions.
Well,
I think
we were chatting about when Grosjean got a race ban. You know, you were saying
there's a Grosjean bell. Hey.
The Grosjean bell has come out. I had to bring him up,
of
didn't
course,
I?
Of
I just find it hard
there
not to bring up Grosjean. I love Grosjean. If people don't know, I just love him. I think he's great. But Hayden, back to my point about Grosjean. So we were chatting the other day about when Grosjean got a race ban. You were saying that potentially if that happened now, he wouldn't have got one.
I don't think so.
That everything is quite
inconsistent. I don't think so. I think because of what happened over that season, and there were quite of issues with Grosjean, I think it was right to have the race ban. I do think it was harsh, but I do think it was potentially right. But I do think the penalties have become softer in Formula One, which is a bit of a different topic because I don't think that Fernando should be penalised. But penalties have been softer. We only really see 5-second penalties dished out now.
Well, they just recently changed it where if you go off track, you get the 10-second penalty now, which I think has been needed for ages. But and
even
I don't know if you guys watch F2. They've been doing 10-second penalties all of last season.
Yeah.
And in F2, it's even more brutal. Like, you'll drop from 5th down to 15th from a 10-second. And then in F1, like, you can just go off track, pop a 5-second.
Sometimes 5 seconds, and you take that hit. Sometimes you're like, do you know what, actually, I'm just going to take the 5-second hit. I think Magnussen, in all fairness, when he was battling with those guys, I think the Haas had the pace.
Yeah.
But Magnussen could have just cut the corner, overtaken Tsunoda, and driven off and beaten by 10 seconds.
Exactly,
I genuinely think Haas had the pace to do that. They were just thinking about Hülkenberg and securing and guaranteeing themselves points, which was the smartest thing to do. But, like, tell me the last time a stop-go penalty was used, an actual stop-go, not 5 seconds in the box. You drive into the pit lane, don't serve a pit stop, you stop, you go. The drive-through penalty, when was the last time one of those was used?
Silverstone 2021 with Lewis, but that was
it. Was it a stop-go? I think it was only a 5 second. I don't think it was.
He had to come in and serve it.
No, I'm pretty sure it was a 5 or 10 second penalty with the pit stop. I don't remember it being a stop-go. Because stop-goes, you have to serve in the next 3 laps.
No, he had to. I'm fairly sure he had to come in.
Yeah, he had to come in, but on a scheduled pit stop.
Really?
Whereas a stop-go is like a drive-through. You have to serve within the next 3 laps.
Oh,
and for me personally, I think that would have been the right penalty to give him because he made a mistake.
Mm.
He missed the apex. He had a collision. He took out his championship rival. I think, I know there's people out there being like, it was a 10-second. Yeah, it was a 10-second penalty added on to his pit stop, which is a severe penalty, but for a team like Mercedes, they can drive as long as they want, get a gap, and I think he still won the race, didn't he? He came back.
Yeah,
whereas
it doesn't affect too much.
A stop-go straight after the red flag, put him at the back. He's been, you know, he's been punished. He's now at the back of the grid. He has to work his way through everybody from the off rather than, I'm going to drive as long as I can, and then I'm going to serve my penalty. It's going to put me third. I'm going to overtake Bottas because he's going to let me through, and then I'm going to hunt down Charles Leclerc, and I'm going to get him.
Yeah.
So I do think penalties aren't as severe now as they used to be. And I think, you know, sometimes let's bring out a stop-go. Let's bring out a drive-through, you know, if they require it. But consistency has to be there for sure.
Yeah, to play on the other side of things about the inconsistency, like I always try to stay clear of like referring to old incidents, even like 2021, because the rules have changed so much even in the last 2 or 3 years. But for me, it's like literally Saudi Arabia. Like the Magnussen, he was doing that, like the braking and like toying with people behind. And when is like doing that and considered dangerous? Like,
Yeah, that's why it is. Obviously, if it ends up in a dangerous situation, like Russell was in, and we heard that obviously on the radio, he was really panicking. He's in the middle of the track. If someone comes and hits him, like that could have been awful. Mm. So I get it because it left a very dangerous, potentially dangerous situation. Mm-hmm. That's why they branded it like that. But it does come for question because I think penalties, obviously, the stewards are only human and humans are going to have different opinions. Mm-hmm. I think that's when it gets a little bit tricky because you'll have fans saying one thing. It's up to the FIA. Mm. It's up to the stewards to make the decision. So you have to go with that. I think it's quite difficult, really.
Yeah. Let's talk about the red flag then and the non-red flag and the virtual safety car, because I know there was a lot of discussion on social media. I want to know what your guys' opinion is. It will start off with you, as you're our guest. What's your opinion? Should it have been red flagged? Was it the right decision?
Looking back, I at first I was like, oh, well, it's the last lap, who cares? Mm-hmm. But looking back, like, there's a car sideways on track, whether it's lap one, lap 30, or the last lap. Mm-hmm. If there's a car blocking the track, no, people can't go around it. Mm-hmm. And if there was a tractor having to come on to get the car, they're going to have to red flag it. Yeah. So why don't they just red flag it final lap? Like, signs can still go past the finish line and celebrate. Everyone can go past the finish line and celebrate. And it's, I don't know, it's just like, you see Stroll's radio, he comes around the corner. It's like, watch out, watch out, watch out. And he's, you know, because it's a VSC. The VSC actually got brought out after he passed the car. So it's like, I don't know, it's a bit, I don't see why they don't red flag it there.
Yeah. I thought they should have red flagged it, like, instantly. I felt George's panic. Why is it not red flagging? I was like, I know it should be on there. I saw a comment, actually. I don't know who tweeted it, but someone was like, I'd be scared if Lance Stroll was coming up behind me as well.
Don't you slander my boy like that. Do you know what I said to myself?
I'm not going to say anything.
You're just going to let somebody else say it, and you're going to dish it on me again.
But I saw it, and I thought I had to bring that up in the podcast. I was like, it did make me laugh. Yeah. But it is very serious. You know, it really should have been red flag. So how do they move on from that then? If they had another incident like that, are they going to red flag it instantly?
I think something needs to be looked at. My opinion of it, I think they did, it was fine. I don't think there was a problem with what they did. Virtual safety car, red flag, the cars are going to drive at the same delta speed. Nothing's going to change there. It's not like red flag comes out, everybody stops instantly. It's not like go-karting. When you go to a go-karting track, the red flag comes out and you just controlled stop, and then you wait till it goes green again.
Or if it's electric, it slows down for you.
Yeah, or it slows down for you.
I'm so angry. I'm like, why is it not moving?
That doesn't happen in F1. You drive to a delta, so they still would have arrived to the action, and the red flag came out after Lance Stroll went past anyway.
Do you not think if it was a red flag, though, like, it'd be more of an immediate response from the drivers? They'd be a bit more
No, because you have a delta. If you go over the delta, you get penalised. At the end of the race, do you really want to get a penalty that's going to put you behind when you're in a point-scoring position? No, it's just not worth the risk. I know that in junior categories, it's a bit more of a risk because there's more on the line for these drivers. If they can get lucky and make an overtake, and that's unfortunately, I think, you know, what happens in junior categories where a lot more crashes happen when there's an incident and there's a yellow flag comes out because someone's like, oh, I might be able to gain a position, or they're just maybe not aware to it. But I think in Formula 1, it never really happens. Someone sees that yellow, they do slow down. Maybe sometimes not enough. Maybe they're not reacting to it. We were very lucky that the gaps were as big as they were, because it could have been a very nasty accident if Lance Stroll was closer. But bringing out a yellow, bringing out a red wouldn't have changed that, because and I do think something does need to be looked at. I don't know what the right actual change is, because you could say the marshal post, who can see that incident, shouldn't necessarily have to go, okay, I need to call up the race director, this has happened, the race director now needs to look at the CCD, okay, right, what's happened, okay, that's happened there, I need to red flag. That takes too long. Like, we saw, it took for Stroll to get past him for the virtual safety car to be deployed. And that would have been the same if it was a red flag. It would have taken that long. Do we allow the marshals to have that decision? But then could there be a situation where the marshal throws out something and it's just like, that was far too extreme, we didn't need that.
Yeah.
So I do think it needs to be looked at. And because there's many, many times, and I've said this so many times, there are many times where we are even more delayed on a safety car decision or a virtual safety car decision or a red flag decision.
Yeah,
sometimes it just stays as
like
the yellow.
The drivers are like, what's going on? You know, is it going to be virtual?
It'd be like half a lap, maybe even a lap sometimes before something's happened. You're like, then, why have you not thrown this out? Yeah. Like, it's very dangerous situation. I think even Saudi, when Stroll crashed, it took a while for a safety car to be deployed. And all it takes is one person to do exactly the same thing, and they've ended up in the same tyre barrier as Lance Stroll's getting out of the car. Like, it just needs to happen very, very quickly, these decisions need to be made.
I feel like then it leads to inconsistencies, like we saw in Abu Dhabi 21, where, you know, Mercedes are trying to predict what's happening with a safety car, a virtual safety car, and then it all gets thrown out the window because you can't build a strategy around something you don't know.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, like, a conversation I saw on Twitter was, like, about IndyCar and how a marshal will be on the scene straight away. Look at the Grosjean crash back in 2020. A marshal needed to be with him straight away. Mm-hmm. If they don't red flag or safety car straight away, and a marshal needs to run across the track, well, then there's another story. What if Russell was trapped underneath and they needed to get him straight away? Like, that's where I kind of disagree. Like, I think if there's a car upside down to a degree in the middle of the track, I think they just need a red flag straight away. It just sends that bit of urgency. But like you said, maybe they do need to change something. They need to have like a red flag or a new flag where everyone stops on track straight away.
Yeah, if a red flag meant that, then I completely agree that a red flag would need to come out for that situation, that you just literally come to a stop, everyone comes to a stop, and then we get the race going once an instance case. Because if a track's blocked, where are you going to go, for example?
I think it's going to be one of those situations where they wait for something unfortunate to happen and then they 100%. Go, here we go, we should change something.
If Stroll had crashed into him, then we would be talking about this completely differently. I think because he would have hit the floor of the car, and I don't know how much protection is there compared to the side impacts and the front impacts, and we could have been talking about a very, very nasty incident. And again, I feel like only something would have drastically changed if that. We need to start being proactive rather than reactive and look at this and go, okay, what can we do to make sure that it doesn't happen? Not, oh crap, it has happened now. Now what do we need to do?
Something about it.
Yeah.
It's the same with the halos though, isn't it? People hated it when they first came in. I feel like it's going to be like this. It'll change. People will say, why are you doing that? It's so dramatic. But then you'll see later it saves someone's life at the end of the day. But let's chat about Carlos Sainz. So he's had a bit of an unfortunate start to the season. You know, he gets dropped from Ferrari. Then he takes his appendix out. He's got appendicitis. Goes through emergency surgery. But then comes out on top to win the race. What do you think of that?
Oh, it's absolutely insane. Like, I mean, I don't know if you saw the celebrations after the race. Like, he's limping away while he's getting sprayed with champagne. So he's clearly still hurt.
Yeah.
So for him to do that and, you know, obviously beat his teammate fair and square, which, man, that's another topic. Like, the Leclerc has been somewhat dominating Sainz since Singapore. And then all of a sudden, the one race that Sainz is on it, beating Leclerc, is the race where he has the opportunity to win. So, I mean, it just shows that Sainz is always there to deliver when the opportunity comes.
What do you make of it, Hayden?
Well, I mean, I've always said this about Sainz, although I do think we need to look into it and some investigations do need to happen. He's a lot lighter now than a lot of the other drivers. I do think he's got an unfair advantage without an appendix.
Did you see all of that at the end of the race? They were like, do you know what? Maybe take your appendix out. If you want to win a race, you want to be a bit lighter, go for it.
I had an interview with Fred Vasseur after the race. He's just like, oh, I don't know if we can have surgery before every race. But maybe that's something we need to look into. But no, I've always been banging his drum. I think he is a fantastic driver. I don't think Charles Leclerc has ever dominated him in that car. I think they've both been very even amongst each other. I have always said that I do think that Charles Leclerc has more of the natural talent, but you know what, now maybe starting to see that Carlos Sainz has both. He's got the brains and he's got the ability and the talent. He beat him in qualifying. He did he didn't beat him in Bahrain qualifying, but beat him in the race. And I do think, okay, with two races in comparing these two, but you know, have Ferrari made the wrong decision? Have they let the wrong driver go? You know, should they have let either driver go? Lewis Hamilton is not having a fantastic season at the moment. I know the car's a bit crap, but they're not having a great season right now. But yeah, Carlos Sainz has been amazing.
Same thing,
championship contender, maybe?
I'm a massive Charles fan. And today, and I was thinking, have they made the wrong decision? After these performances, would you think, should we have Sainz and Hamilton? They're always going to want to have Hamilton. I think despite him not having the best season, whether it's him mentally or whether it is the car, I think you're always going to want to take him, aren't you? The sponsors he's going to bring, it's going to be amazing for the team. But I was looking at it, I thought, I never rated Sainz, and you always did. And we had lots of chats, and I was like, he's a good driver, but he's not standing out to me. You know, he's a bit like mediocre in the sense of he's a fantastic talent, but he's not going above and beyond like Max or Alonso or someone that's a bit more aggressive. Now I take it all back. He's smart. He helps with the strategy as well. You see him talking to the team of, you know, maybe we should do this, maybe we should do that. So he's got the intelligence, like you say. He's got the talent. If he can do it when he's not feeling great and wins a race, why would another team not snatch him up? If I was Red Bull, I would be going, Perez, see you later. Sainz, get you in.
Potentially. I think it's a good shout. I think he's had a fantastic season, and any team that picks him up will be lucky to have him. It'd be very interesting to see what would happen had he not have had the surgery and missed out on Saudi, because he would definitely be leading the championship, because he's 11 points behind, so needed to have finished fourth or 12 points. So, and I think that would have happened. The way the standings are, very much Red Bull on top at the moment, Ferrari second team, McLaren, and then you've got Aston Martin and Mercedes are quite similar, but I'd say Mercedes maybe slightly better than Aston. So I think he definitely would have scored easily those 12 points, would be championship leader had he not missed out that race. Interesting stat that I heard.
Go on.
Every time I've gone to Albert Park, if a team has got a 1-2 there, they have gone on to win both championships. Is that stat going to be broken this season, or are we going to see a Ferrari constructors and a Carlos or Charles Leclerc championship. Leclerc is now only 4 points behind.
Exactly. Science I was 11. Looking at the standings from both drivers and constructors, and I was like, I don't think it's super unrealistic to say they could catch Red Bull, but I do think it's, if Perez isn't performing super well in comparison to Max, and also if they have more issues, obviously, with the reliability of the car or whatever's going on with the car. So I do think we may see it, but it's unfortunate you have to rely on something going wrong at Red Bull.
Maybe that's what we need. We just need Red Bull every three races just to have a DNF.
They'll still be ahead of the championship,
but it might be like, oh, maybe. Everyone get their hopes up a little bit, then be disappointed, then get their hopes up a bit again, and then get disappointed. And we can just have that going on for the whole season. Who knows?
Yeah, I think I predicted McLaren to win the Constructors for the reason you said, where it's going to be really tight and Perez needs to be on it. And if he's not, then McLaren will take those points away. But I think switch McLaren with Ferrari now, I think that will be the case. I mean, it's unfortunate Sainz missed that race. And I mean, I guess Behrmann brought in points for the team, but I guess for Sainz's championship, like that's, like you said, like a fair few points that he's missed out on now. But yeah, I think obviously Perez finishing 1-2 in Bahrain and Saudi, like that looked like, okay, Red Bull was going to dominate this year again, but we kind of saw those same issues come in from Perez in Australia, like we saw at the exact same point last year. And then once we got to Monaco, it started to really fall a bit. So, I mean, I hope for Perez's sake and for the, you know, the championship's sake, like I really want to see Perez battling the Ferrari. So I hope he's on it. But if not, then we will get that closer championship fight or constructors championship fight.
I think a lot of people were very happy because I think they thought, you know, right, Max, DNF, he's out. Perez is going to come and win. Lot of people were very happy that obviously got the position that he did. But is it quite bad to kind of not want Red Bull to do very well just to make F1 a little bit more exciting?
He's like, yeah, because he's Red Bull.
I know, you can't really say too much, Blake, you know, working with Red Bull.
Yeah, well, my problem was I put a tweet out after the race. I was like, well, this goes to show that just because we get a different winner doesn't mean it's going to be a good race. And, you know, I saw people in the comments like, yeah, but how many good races did we have last year when Max won? I'm like, Netherlands, Britain, like Monza, the list goes on. And it goes to show that, like, look at the other parts of racing and non-track racing. It was just unfortunate this race we had no racing.
I think because a lot of people look at what's going on at the front, and if there's not a battle for the lead, they can just go, race is boring.
Yeah.
Which is fair enough. Everyone watches different parts of the racing.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone's a different type of fan. I'm a fan who will watch a battle for 15th, no points. And I'm like, oh, that's exciting. For example, the Magnussen stuff. I'm like, this battle for 12th is incredible.
I love it. Like, I love that as well.
But someone will be like, why am I watching a battle for 12th? Yeah. I want to watch this for the lead. And that is completely fine. You know, everyone is allowed their different opinion. Everyone's allowed to support different parts of this sport. And what dictates a boring and exciting race can be different amongst people. Someone could just be excited because there is a new winner, and that's completely fine. You know, you are excited because, oh my God, can Science bring it home? Can we have, we're going to have a different winner anyway this season, but, you know, can he bring it home? Or maybe someone else might nick it. We'll wait and see.
And then there's people where, even if it's a good race, just because it's the end of the season, they're like, oh, well, championship's over. But it's like, just enjoy the race.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, taking all the different variables. Like you say, with Haas, I'm always buzzing. When they do well, I'm like, yes, Haas, were they correct to get rid of Stein? Because now it's showing they're doing well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's all down to the car also. But, you know, Steiner has a part in deciding, you know, what they're going to go with the car. So, do you think it was the
Well, I don't know how much effect, because obviously the guy who's taken over has been there for quite a while. So he's been making those decisions as well. He's just had a promotion. Günther Steiner, whilst he's a great character, brilliant for Netflix.
Got to love it.
I think had Drive to Survive not happened, I don't think he would have been in that team for as long as he has been.
Yeah.
You know, you give people chances for sure, and he's had how long since 2016? And the team has always been a yo-yo team. They had a fantastic 2022, but then they dropped down, and then 2023 they were the worst team by the end of the season, bottom of the standings. This season again, things are starting well for them. They look like they've sorted out the tire wear issues, which they massively struggle with, and they look like they're now actually, I would say, out of the backmarkers, the best race pace team. Whereas last year, you would have put them the other way. Great qualifying team, terrible race pace, would be up there in qualifying, down there in the race. Whereas now it's the opposite, and Hülkenberg and Magnussen are able to get the car up in qualifying, but then in the race, they're able to back it up as well. Yuki Tsunoda as well, fantastic drive from him.
Very
amazing weekend. Once again, putting Daniel Ricciardo in doubt. And I know that there are going to be Ricciardo fans that will be like, oh, this has happened. He said that they're still not unsure with the setup and they're trying to work things out. But how many more excuses can we give him? And I'm saying this as someone who likes Daniel Ricciardo. I don't dislike Daniel Ricciardo. I like him. I think he's a great personality and a great character and a fantastic driver when he was in the Red Bull days. But those questions do need to be asked. He is an experienced driver, and so far Yuki Tsunoda is wiping the floor with him, and he needs to look at that and needs to build it back up, because he's under, you know, his seat is looking like it's going to be Lawson's potentially after China if nothing changes. It needs to be looked at.
Yeah,
what do you think, Blake?
I think the biggest problem with the Ricciardo situation is they brought him on after seeing his results in the sim and in the Red Bull that test day. And the funny enough, obviously, that's the Red Bull and it's very pointy. And they've started to build the RB around that kind of style. Mm. And now Daniel's come in this year and it looks like he just can't really feel comfortable in the car again. And Yuki's looking great in it. Mm-hmm. So they've changed the direction of the car, and clearly the team's feeling a bit iffy about, well, he's not really performing, so if we change the direction of the car, is it worth getting someone else in? But I mean, it's tough because he had that whole half a season to prove himself last year, obviously breaking his hand, missing, was it 5 races, I think? Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's a big chunk of races not to prove himself. And he was doing good against Yuki, but then there was like, oh, well, he's still recovering from a hand injury. And now this year, direction of the car's changed, and it's like, well, I don't know, is 4 races or however long they give him too short, or is that enough time to be like, well, what's the point?
Mm-hmm. I think too short. I
have quite a different opinion, though. I think with Red Bull and the affiliated teams, when they just swap people in and out, I don't know how much I agree with that. I spoke about this one time. I was like, would you not? And I get it. It's all for points. I get it. You know what I mean? You want to get there. You want to get the best driver that's going to maximize that car. But I'm like, would you not just wait till the end of the season and then say, see you later, we're bringing in someone else?
Here's my idea, right? You take all 5 drivers, you chuck them in the sim the week before. Mm-hmm. 2 fastest go in the Red Bull. Next 2 fastest go in the RB. Yeah. Slowest.
Switch them around.
Rotating 5 drivers every week.
I'd say, I mean, if Max Verstappen does dominate the championship, you take him out, you put him in the RB, you put Yuki, Perez, just and Daniel and Lawson, and they swap around, and then they have 1v1s against each other, and we get a good decision of who is the best driver to put in that car, if anyone, because they might take on Carlos Sainz, which obviously from another team, but he was part of the Red Bull roster before, so they know him quite well. I agree. I do think that, you know, China is too soon. I think, yes, okay, he is an experienced driver. He shouldn't need to take time to be like, oh, this is not right, that's not right. But let's allow it. Let's play devil's advocate. Let's allow it for a little bit. Halfway through the season, then we assess it. You know, I do think that sometimes Red Bull are too abrupt. I will always say that Danny Kvyat's dismissal was a really bad decision. You look in hindsight and it was a great decision because Max Verstappen is the driver that he is, and he is absolutely incredible. Yes. And it's just unfortunate for Danny Kvyat that Max Verstappen was waiting in the wings. But Kvyat was not doing a bad job at that stage. Mm-hmm. He got the podium in China. He beat Ricciardo across the season the year before. And he locked up. He hit Vettel. Okay, they had a crash. Vettel then had a puncture because of it. They were going for a fast turn 3. Vettel's then slow because of that. Kvyat couldn't really react. And he went into the back of him again. It was just 2 shunts in 1 race that was like, okay, cool, you're out, which I think was seriously harsh. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people would agree with that. But Max Verstappen, obviously, you know, what has come from that? In hindsight, it was a correct decision to put him in the car. Was it a correct decision to take Kvyat out of the car? Mm-hmm. No, but it's one of those tricky situations. But I agree, Red Bull are too aggressive with it sometimes. And it's just unfortunate on some drivers' careers.
Yeah, I think the problem Red Bull have at the moment from an outside perspective is they don't really know what they want to do with Yuki. So when Nyck de Vries came in, it's like, you shouldn't be losing to Yuki, and then you're out. And then other times it's like, oh, well, Yuki's doing good for, you know, his experience. It's like, well, this is his 4th season now.
Yeah, yeah.
And then so sometimes they underrate him, sometimes they overrate him. It's like, if you knew what you wanted with Yuki, it would make the decision with Daniel, Liam, De Vries much easier.
Yeah.
But then obviously you don't know what's happening with the whole how his position with his seat, so it always complicates things.
I just think it's too much pressure as well for then the person that they bring in, whoever they obviously swap out. So if they bring in Liam Lawson and then he doesn't perform as well, then he's gone. And I just think it's too much of this, right? Let's get them in. No, let's
but
get
Liam
them
has did proved himself.
Liam did perform
exactly,
and I'd so say he matched Tsunoda. I wouldn't say he beat him because it was unfortunate 2 races where Tsunoda had issues, but I think they matched each other. And I think it was very strong for someone to come in and match someone who is in his fourth season now. Yeah.
And I think
you're right about Yuki. They don't really know what to do with him. And I don't think the Red Bull seat would be the right place for him because I think Yuki's still inconsistent.
Yeah.
And I don't think they would go through the phase that they did with Max, where Max was inconsistent earlier on into the Red Bull. Like, he had some really incredible performances, but sometimes he'd make these silly crashes, silly incidents, and they took that time with him because they knew we've got such an incredible talent here that if we just, you know, train him up, iron out these issues, we're going to have one of the most consistent drivers, and look what they've got now. I don't think Yuki Tsunoda's on the same level. I think he has some incredible natural talent. But I do think there's inconsistencies there. And I don't think Red Bull would be the right place for him because I don't think he'd be given that chance to allow those little inconsistencies to be ironed out over time.
Well, if they did that, they would get him out very quickly if he's making those mistakes.
And I think it would ruin his career. Yeah.
I think the thing that Liam showed, and even someone like Ollie Bemmons, they've come in the car straight away under all these circumstances and perform straight away, which if you look at recent rookies, Zhou, even Tsunoda, and obviously all the others who aren't in the sport anymore, like, they took multiple seasons to get up to speed, and they're not even up to speed. So, you know, if you look
don't
at
you
the clear...
Don't you bash my boy Zhou. He is up to speed.
Yeah, be careful.
And he is matching Valtteri Bottas. Thank you very much.
Now, but...
He's been matching Valtteri Bottas for the whole time.
I mean, Kicks Alba having a bit of a stinker.
They need to learn how to do pit stops, right? How is it every single week they can't do a pit stop? Bottas in Bahrain, Zhou in Saudi, and then both of them in Australia had a long pit stop. What is going on? I'm watching there, and I'm like, Zhou could have a good race here. And then he's now 19 seconds off everybody because they botched another pit stop. And I'm like, please give these guys a chance.
The fastest as well. Like, it's not the worst. It was okay. It was, you know, midfield. Now with the botched pit stops, it's just making it even worse. It's so bad.
Are they just trying to get, you know, we've got the DHL fastest pit stop award. Like, are they just trying to go for the slowest every season? I don't know.
This is the thing I don't understand with pit stops is it's the same teams who are quickest every week. And like, don't get me wrong, I understand there is talent that goes into pit stops, but like, why aren't these back market teams, even a team like Mercedes has dropped off in pit stops lately, it's like, aren't you practicing every week, getting a routine? Like, why can't you look at the way a Red Bull or McLaren do their pit stops and replicate it and be able to get consistent 2 seconds? I don't get it. Like, just keep training.
It's just inconsistency.
Williams used to be one of the strongest when they were a back market team. Like, they were terrible on the track, but in terms of pit stops, they were the fastest. Like, every week you'd always see them winning that award. And so, it's one of those things that, you know, time has to be delegated and into the right areas, but pit stops are a fundamental point. And if it's an issue with wheel nuts or something like that, that needs to be looked at and go, right, this seriously is not working, because that is three all races practice in a row we have lost any chance of scoring points.
I'd be keeping the team in overnight. Like, right, guys, it's pit stop time. Let's practice.
The list of races you could go off of where someone's lost a podium or a win because of a pit stop.
Yeah.
Germany 2019, you've got
Daniel Bahrain 2020.
Yeah.
In Monaco.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, if you just get that right, completely different race.
Yeah.
But speaking of Williams, can we talk about what happened over the weekend? I really want to know your opinion on this. Do you agree with what they did? Obviously, Sergeant out, Albon in, even though Albon obviously caused the crash himself. So what do you think about that decision?
I'm a very big, like, business person, competition person when it comes to stuff like that. So I think it doesn't matter how... it doesn't matter how nice you are or what the situation is. Like, at the end of the day, Albon was consistently outscoring. I mean, was it 22-0 last year on Sargent?
Yeah.
He is clearly the better driver. When it comes to a competition and a business where there's millions of dollars on the line, he is going to do the job. I refer it to football, right? Or soccer. Where
football.
Yeah, well, football, sorry. Football. For the American audience. And Australians. Hey, it's Australian Grand Prix. Who's going to take the penalty? It's the best player. And I know it's different because Logan's in his own driver's championship, but there's no money for the driver's championship. Yeah. It's just pride, and he can pride himself on getting some points elsewhere. So for me, I think it's a very, very hard decision, but I think it's the right one. And I mean, Albon was close to getting points.
Nine tenths, I think it was off of it.
So very, very close.
Do you agree, Hayden?
Again, I think I stand by your point. I can understand where fans are not happy about it and why Logan Sargeant wouldn't be happy about it, because you've done nothing wrong. You haven't put your car in the wall. And your seat has been taken away from me. I love Max Verstappen's comment that was like, if that had happened to me, I would flatten that car so no one could drive it. Which is fair enough.
Max Verstappen.
Because Max Verstappen can say that because he's a champion of this sport, and now he has that luxury to do what he wants. But if Logan Sargeant went, no, you're not having my car, and put it in the wall ever, like, well, you ain't driving for us ever again. See you later. So he has to think of his contract, and that he's only, you know, down for one season. So he's got to do everything by the team to make them as happy as possible. So if they're going to ask, he's going to say yes. He's, as much as he didn't want to.
Well, I was going to say, he would have been asked, are you happy to give up your seat? And he's ultimately, at the end of the day, said yes. So he is a team player. And I think some people are freaking out, being like, he's forced to do that, which I'm sure contractually somewhere, maybe he has to be forced. But I'd say the opposite. I'd say it's still his decision at the end of the day. And he's offered to give it up. And I mean, to be honest, I think he's played the safe bet. Because if you hop in that car, crash it yourself, or get no points, finish last, you're going to be clowned on.
I think that would ruin his reputation even more. I think a lot of people respect him now, though, for that decision. Because, like you say, if it was his, or if it was and he did get forced out, people are looking at him like, wow, he's a team player. Maybe if he can get a little bit better in his driver craft, or he's in a different team, or whatever it is, he would be an asset to have to a team, because he's going to be a team player. He doesn't stand out in the sense of he's, you know, egotistical or an aggressive driver that, you know, he's always going to put himself first. He's shown that he's a team player. So does that make him admirable, or is his driving not good enough for another team to want him?
I know it's kind of not the same, but when drivers like compromise their own race, compromise their own points, we've seen it a few times, to get, help their other driver get points, I don't feel like it's any different in this case, where he's chosen, well, my, like, I mean, it's really early on the season, but Albon has the best chance of scoring points, so.
I think more eyes will be on him now in the future, and I think he's grown a fan base. He's grown his fan base more because of it, because people have jumped to his side and his defence, and I think people will be watching next week, and I don't think there will be pressure. Like, there was a lot of pressure on Albon this week. He had to perform. If he didn't, if he crashed, everyone would be like, this was the worst decision you've ever made. It was unfortunate he didn't score points. Had he got that one point, everyone would be like, okay, he made the right decision. Some people might be like, well, Logan would have scored points then. You know, I don't think that would have been true. I think,
don't know how much I agree with that statement, but
you never know. It's a what-if scenario. You never know. But I think the odds would have been more in Albon's favour.
I was in two minds when it came out, though. I thought, my heart has just dropped for Sargeant. How could this happen? But you do have to put your business hat on. It's all about scoring the points. So I didn't think realistically he would get
tough decision, right decision.
Yeah, I think it just comes back to Albon was the one who crashed. If it had been a mechanical failure, I think it wouldn't have been as big of a deal.
Yeah, I agree.
Time to get into hot takes. It's time to get into our hot takes. This is where you, the subscribers, send us your Formula One hot takes and we rate how spicy they are. So let's get into the first hot take. This is from Holly Stobbits, and she says that Danny Ric will be gone before the summer break with Lawson coming to take over.
Well, it's already been rumoured, hasn't it, that he's been given till China to big up his performances, and otherwise he will be out, which I think is way too soon, but I think it's, at the moment, you wouldn't say no to that. I mean, they got rid of Nick De Vries when he wasn't performing to Yuki Tsunoda. Daniel Ricciardo's a bit better, but I wouldn't say, you know, is beating Yuki Tsunoda or even really matching him. So, yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, obviously keep in mind it's just a rumour at the end of the day, but I mean, Daniel has the direction the car's changed and he just doesn't seem to be suiting it. It's only been three races now. And yeah, I mean, he had half a season to prove himself. I personally thought he proved himself to get another year. So then to be dropped after five races, I think that's really harsh. But again, De Vries is brought in. You've got a job to do. He couldn't achieve it, so he has dropped. And Daniel's been brought in, obviously, with the more marketing power as well. You've got this job to do of deliver points and bring in sponsors for the team. And if he can't deliver the points, then maybe that's something they'll look at. You've got Liam Lawson ready. I mean, Liam's even been very vocal recently, which was surprising to me, about how he's like, you know, waiting for Daniel's seat or waiting for a seat. And I was like, okay, Liam, like,
See him now in the garage. He's just stood behind him and he gets in the car and be like, you better perform, otherwise that's mine.
Yeah.
He's whispering in his ear, like, just you wait.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be surprised. But I think it will be quite harsh. But then again, they've done it with De Vries, they've done it with all their drivers. So you got to treat Daniel the same, even if he's got more marketing power.
I know. I don't know how spicy this hot take is, really, because it's the philosophy of Red Bull and the affiliate teams to swap in, swap out. So I don't think it's super unrealistic for this to happen.
I'd say because there's a lot of Ricciardo fans, there's a big Ricciardo fan base, and a lot of them would disagree. But at the end of the day, I agree. He's in a terrible car. The car is not great.
Yeah.
It's a back marker, and the race pace, at least from the first two races, didn't look great. Yuki did a good job in Australia. But the one thing you have to do, if you're in a back marker team, the one job is beat your teammate. Mm-hmm. And if you're not beating your teammate, you're not doing good enough. Because that's the only thing you can be compared against when you're down there and scoring 0 points. And he's not.
And I was going to say, on your point of like Daniel Ricciardo's got so many fans, this might be a take in itself, but I would argue Daniel's the second most popular driver in Formula One behind Lewis 100%. Hamilton. Like, if you went up to people in the street, I think people would say Lewis first, and then Daniel would probably be the second most named name. Mm-hmm. So to see him out of the sport, to see him get dropped, I think that is just media headlines. Like, everyone will be talking about it. Mm-hmm. So,
do you think that if there's a space in another team that anyone else would snatch him up?
Yeah, I think
you do think that's possible.
I think for Daniel's own interest, I think it's, if he was to be dropped mid-season, I think that's going to be better than getting dropped at the end of the season, because he has all year for all the other teams that are doing the whole silly season.
The Red Bull Junior team always love to leave it last minute as well. They always like to take as long as possible until, you know, it's basically the next season. They're like, okay, this is our driver lineup. It's quite surprising they went quite early. I think it was Japan last time that they made that decision, but usually they take quite a while, and then it gives drivers not really too much time because other teams have snapped up, they've already filled their lineup. So to be fair, China, and I do think he would be picked up because there is a good driver in there. There really is, and given the right car, I think we spoke about this before, you know, he can perform really well in a car that suits him perfectly. If he can be given that, you've got a great driver. But also the markability that he has, the sponsors that he can bring in. A team like Haas, a team like Kick Sauber, you know, Audi's coming in a few years. Mm-hmm. He is a driver that potentially just needs a seat that can wait until Audi takes over and potentially becomes a good team. Whereas I think
even
someone
if
like
he takes
Sainz,
time out the sport and comes back.
Yeah, I think so. I think someone like Sainz going there doesn't make sense to me, because you're going to a back market team that you're going to have to wait maybe 3, 4, 5 years before they could even just potentially be good. There's no guarantee. So you're wasting your career. He wants to go to a Mercedes. He wants to go to an Aston, to a Red Bull, to a team that could be fighting at the front as soon as possible. Whereas Daniel Ricciardo, I think, can take that hit because he needs a drive.
He doesn't, like, have, that
doesn't have that luxury to choose.
Consistency at the minute.
Yeah.
What are we rating this hot take then? From 1 to 5, what would you give it?
I'd go with a 3. I think it's medium.
I agree with that.
I think the Daniel Ricciardo fans would not like it, which is fair. It's understandable. But I also think everyone's thinking it. At the same time,
I was going to say I'd give it a 2 just because Liam's already proven himself. And if Liam got the seat, I don't think it's as a surprise as putting in, well, Liam at the when he came in, or if there was another junior waiting around. So I think it's like, there's proof in the pudding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree. I'd say like around a 2 because you can debate it a little bit, but I think we all think potentially it's going to happen. So 2 and a 3, we'll go with that one. Okay, the next hot take is from Randy Dunning Jr. And they say, George needs to calm down with trying to pass. He wrecks himself and goes tunnel vision. Now, I think that is quite a spicy one because poor George. What do you think?
I disagree.
Oh.
Because I put it in the same boat as Max Verstappen in his early Red Bull career.
Okay.
Very aggressive, very fast driver. Made the odd mistake with overtaking drivers and sometimes resulted in a shunt. Then he had to go through a few years of the car being absolutely terrible in terms of reliability. But I do think that, you know, drivers go through that. They need that time. You don't learn unless you make mistakes. If you never made a mistake, you're never going to learn anything. Yeah. No one's born perfect. So you could go there and be scared of making mistakes and therefore you'd never be a fast driver. Or you could full on go for it, make a mistake and be like, okay, this is where I went wrong. This is what I need to make sure next time.
Do you not think that George has had enough time, though, to make his mistakes?
I don't think so.
It's not as if he's, like, you know, 1, 2 years in the sport.
Yeah, but he's still a young driver. I think the mindset of people when they think about drivers now has changed massively because I think we're seeing a lot more younger drivers come in. I mean, Lewis Hamilton was, like, one of the youngest when he came in, but he was still a lot older than the younger drivers that we have coming in now.
Yeah.
So I think people look at it and go, oh, well, you've had 4 seasons in the sport. You should be this level. But I don't think it works like that because they're still immature in a sense. Like, I'm 27 now and I think about when I was 23 and I'm like, that was a kid. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a really immature kid. But someone else might think of 23 and be like, you're mature, you're an adult. But that's not necessarily how it works. You mature as you go on. And I think, yes, the more seasons you have, the more experience you have, but age is still something that needs to be brought into it too. And you should be allowed this time to nurture and to grow and to make these mistakes. Lewis Hamilton's still making mistakes. Alonso's still making mistakes. Mm-hmm. They still learn as they go. They don't make as many because they've made so many previously. Mm-hmm. So I think allow these mistakes to happen and we'll get a better driver from it.
Do you agree, Blake?
I disagree with Hayden, so I agree with the prompt. I think, I mean, I've always defended Leclerc with the mistakes thing. I would prefer to see a driver pushing and be good 20 out of 24 races and make four races they'd chuck on the wall because they're on it every single time. And I think George is one of those drivers who is really talented, but he makes those mistakes. But I do disagree. I saw someone on Twitter say, like, I've never seen a driver be putting the pressure on and they crumble under their own pressure. And it's like, that's always been the case. Look at Canada. He was chasing down the leaders, crash. Singapore, chasing down the leaders, crash. Chasing down Alonso in Australia, crash. He's crashing from his own kind of like, I don't know, over-eager. Mm-hmm. Is that the word? Over-eagerness?
I think he gets a bit overconfident at times. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, so I think he does need to calm it down because, I mean, that's a lot of points being thrown away. But I do think there is the argument, obviously, like, he's still new to new to that experience at driving at the front. And personally, I don't expect him to be beating Lewis because of that, because he's got so much learning to do at the front. And I think it's showing now when he has had those opportunities, he is chucking it away.
Well, I think he's had a very strong season.
I agree with both your points there, though. I know that's the thing. Like when he first came, when he was in Williams, I think everyone was like, wow, you know, star driver, potential world champion the next few years. When he went into Mercedes, I was a bit apprehensive. I thought there was a lot of pressure on him. Everyone's expecting him to perform really well, but he's against Lewis Hamilton. So how's that going to compare? But then he did impress and he was, you know, outperforming Lewis. So I was like, oh, you know, maybe he is fantastic. He is going to be the next world champion. Obviously, Mercedes have dropped a little bit now, so maybe not a Mercedes. But it's true. I think he gets way too overconfident, and that's where you see the mistakes. You'll see that in anything. You know, when you relax a little bit because you think, oh, I can do this. So you kind of relax and push at the same time, and that's where you get inconsistent and you make mistakes. So I agree with both. I think this person, Randy Dunning Jr., is onto something. But I think I'd give that hot take, I'm saying a 4. I think that's quite spicy because I think everyone will have different opinions, like we can see.
Yeah, I think I can agree with a 4. I think if you look back on his career, Williams wasn't really something that he can really be judged against because you've not really got a teammate to learn from. Kubica was not the Kubica that he was. And Latifi was not an exceptional driver like Lewis is. He's up against Lewis. He can learn a lot from Lewis.
Yeah.
And I think the first season we saw Mr. Consistent. He was regarded Mr. Consistency because he was always popping up inside that top 5. The car was a lot better than it is now. Compared to the rest of the grid. And I feel like, you know, he had that first season to be like, I need to prove myself. And I need to prove myself a worthy member of this team. So I just need to be consistent. Now he's proved himself and he got that race win in 22. Mm-hmm. I think now 23 and 24, he is now pushing the boundaries a bit more. He's pushing himself and he's pushing the car. And I'm not against that. I agree with you. I'd much rather see a driver pushing than just being, okay, I'm just going to settle. I'm going to settle for behind Alonso.
Yeah, because people get a lot of stick when, I think a lot of drivers like Bottas, for example, when they're too relaxed and they are settling, they're just doing what they need to, they get a lot of stick for that as well.
The problem with Russell, though, is if he just didn't crash, everyone, I think a lot of people, I should say, would be gassing him up and like, oh my God, you're beating Lewis. But these little mistakes that he does do then makes people be like, oh, he's nowhere near Lewis. So he's actually very consistent, having a great season. So if he just stops those mistakes, I think there is an argument that he's outperforming Lewis overall.
So what number are you giving?
I'd say 4, but I'd also say let's come back to this in 2 years' time. In 2 years' time, we're still talking about this. I fully agree.
Yeah.
In 2 years' time, we see a more consistent driver. Hayden was right. Okay, I'm going to stick by that.
That never happens. Hayden's never right. What are you giving it, Blake?
Yeah, I'd say, like you said, I think giving a 4 because it is something that a lot of people agree and disagree on. But yeah, I think,
it's a 4. The next hot take is from Don Corello, and they say most of Alonso's so-called wily actions are just dirty driving. I think that's super spicy as well because Alonso is known for his aggressive driving. Now, obviously, we've seen it. It's getting called potentially dangerous. And I think he can find himself in dangerous situations because he will push that driver behind to its limit. Even when he tries to overtake, he is quite, he's on the ball, isn't it? He's going to push it to the maximum he can. And, you know, if the other driver or even himself isn't completely in the zone, that is the perfect opportunity to make a very dangerous mistake. So I see it. I think he's just very on the limits, and that's why it potentially is being masked as dirty driving. But at the end of the day, he's racing. he's pushing for the team, and we can see he's doing an amazing job with the Aston Martin. So I don't know. I think this is quite spicy, but I don't think I'd go as bold as saying dirty driving.
Well, I've seen you on the sim. You're a bit of a dirty driver. What's your opinion on this?
I don't think he's dirty. I think every sport you've got to, especially Formula One, you've got to maximize everything. And I think Alonso's so good at knowing where the line is and teetering on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we spoke about it earlier, like with the Australian Grand Prix penalty. He probably didn't deserve it, but there's, you know, you could say here or there. But you've got to do that. If you're just sitting there being like, oh, well, I'm just going to let this guy pass me, or I'm just going to not bother to overtake. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, there are drivers on the grid who are very careful. That is why they're as good and consistent as they are. But think about the amount of missed opportunities they've missed out on. Whereas, like, Alonso's always trying to get the best result he can. And to do that, you've got to push the limits. And so, yeah, I wouldn't say it's dirty. I think it's just using his ability. And I mean, to me, I've not seen him do anything wrong in the recent years, so I wouldn't say it's dirty.
You don't agree with that penalty?
No.
I think it was a little bit too harsh.
Yeah.
It's debatable, isn't it, really? I mean, Hayden, what do you think?
Gamesmanship at the end of the day. It's not cheating. It's not breaking the rules. Mm-hmm. As an athlete, as a top-performing athlete, it's not just your job to be good at the sport you're doing. You have to also kind of do your research, look into it, and look at the rule book and go, okay, where can I push the line? I think Max Verstappen's a great example. 2021, there was a lot of talk about, oh, that's not right, this is not right. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the rules that were given, as long as you're alongside at the apex or ahead of the apex, you dictate the line. So every time he would just launch it up the inside, if he made the corner, if he didn't make the corner, I'd always hear Christian Horner at the end be like, well, he was ahead of the apex, so it was his corner. Mm-hmm. And that is the rule book that was provided to the drivers. So he looked at that and went, okay, I'm going to follow these rules to the exact line. And I'm not going to interpret about being a fair driver or this or that. It's gamesmanship. And he, you know, won the championship because of it. If you want to be a champion, sometimes you have to be a little bit aggressive.
You've got to push it to
and
the
a
limits.
Little bit on the line. Yeah, yeah. You can't be Mr. Nice Man.
Exactly. And you brought up a really good point with Alonso and like looking at the rules. One that comes to my mind is one of the Russian Grand Prix. I can't remember which year. And the ruling was, there was no ruling about going off track on the first lap. Mm-hmm. FIA were really...
So if you went around the bollard, it was fine.
They were really delicate about, first lap will let you off. So he's like, you know what?
I'm just going to
go
off.
I'm just going to go off. And he overtook. He didn't overtake anyone. He just avoided all the carnage. Went through.
I think he did actually overtake someone. I think he did actually make an overtake because of it. But nothing happened because.
Yeah, because then
as you said, he tried it.
He read the rules.
Like, well, this is allowed.
So, and he even asked in the briefing. He's like, "So can we go around the bollard?" They're like, "Yeah." So he's like, "I'm going to do it." And people are like, "Oh, that's so unfair." It's like, "Well, is it unfair? Because he was allowed to."
Mm. Exactly. Then if it's in the rules, it's not unfair. Yeah. It's definitely intelligent driving, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's not dirty driving. Potentially, it's intelligent driving. So if they can push to the limits and, you know, kind of maneuver around the rule book slightly where you're not breaking anything, then why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah. It's tactics. It's just smart
like
tactics
Kevin
at
Magnussen,
the end of the day.
Yeah, you know,
it's
he was getting penalties left, right, and centre. But do you know what? He made an interesting race and it was great for the team as well. So
it's your job to keep the driver behind. It's your job to overtake the driver ahead of you. Mm-hmm. You have to size up and be intelligent with those overtakes. That's why I think I really, really love junior Formula categories like F2 and F3, because you don't have the advantage of, oh, I've got my battery, I can burn my battery here, they're out of battery, I'm going to make an easy overtake. You have to be smart. You have to wait a few laps to be like, where are they strongest? Where are they weakest? Oh, they're weak at this corner. I can launch one up the inside. I'm probably going to catch them off guard. I'm probably going to get the overtake.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's dirty driving. So I'm going to give that hot take. I'm going to give it a 2. Because I think it is quite spicy, but after we've chatted about it, I'm looking at it from a completely different angle. I'm like, no, do you know what? Let the man do intelligent driving, not dirty. If it's outside the rules, then yes, it's dirty driving. So I'm going to say a 2.
It's a 1. It's just picking at little things. I think it's taking the penalty that I think was very harsh out of context. And I think if we took away all these things that drivers were allowed to do of like a little bit of tactics, we'd have an even more boring sport where everyone would just drive flat out and everyone would just be in whatever position their car is in. And then that's what we get at the end of the day. So I think let's allow these drivers to be on the line, not over the line. Don't put someone in a wall. Don't crash someone out on purpose, you know, but be smart with it.
I'd probably give it a one or two as well. I think it's part of the sport and sport in general, and you just always want to see drivers pushing to the limits, and otherwise, like you said, it just gets boring. And, you know, as long as it's not dangerous, the sport's always going to be dangerous to a degree, and as long as they're not going over that line, then it's fine.
Mm-hmm. So not super spicy.
Not spicy at all.
Yeah.
No, just
lemon and herb.
Lemon and herb from Nando's. Thank you so much for joining us, Blake. It's been a pleasure having you on the pod. How'd you find it?
That was good. I really enjoyed chatting to you guys, and I think there was actually a lot to talk about despite a kind of boring Grand Prix.
I thought it was quite a good Grand Prix, but thank you so much, and thank you, Hayden, for joining me as always.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you are enjoying putting up with me every single week.
I know. I'm not. I'm it's losing the
pleasure.
Will.
Always a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Remember to tune in next week. We're here every Monday.